Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Deng Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, October 15th, 2018. Fresh fighting breaks out in Yei River State.
We ran with nothing. Once the armed men get you, whether you're a child, a woman, or elderly, you will be killed.
And a South African official presses South Sudan's leaders to implement the peace deal.
Our main objective of being here is to support all the initiatives that are here that are aimed at finding long-lasting solutions and peace for the people of South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Hundreds of civilians are fleeing their homes in Yei River County's Minyori Payam following deadly clashes between rival armed opposition groups for four straight days. The Yei River County Commissioner says an unknown number of civilians have been killed in the fighting. A SPLA-IO spokesman confirms fighting continues, but accuses National Salvation Front rebels of attacking SPLA-IO positions. Daniel Friday Martin reports for VOA from Yei.
Hundreds of exhausted-looking civilians, mostly women and children, are camping under a large mango tree at the Episcopal Church compound in Yei, while aid workers attend to the IDPs trying to assess their needs. Displaced villager Monica Dudu says she saw many bodies lying on the ground as she fled the area yesterday. She says when the fighting broke out, many villagers ran into the bush. Speaking in her native Kakua language while fighting back tears, Dudu says when they heard gunshots, she and her husband ran in separate directions. She says she does not know her husband's whereabouts.
I ran without anything. I didn't know where my husband ran off to. The fighters have been moving from one house to another in our hideouts. The fighting continues and I saw dead bodies on the ground, but I could not count how many they were because of the fighting.
Dudu is calling on humanitarian organizations to rescue the displaced villagers with food and non-food items. Timon Lubari, a Minyori Payam local community leader, says rebel fighters burned down their entire village. Speaking in Kakwa, Lubari says rather than fighting each other, some of the rebel fighters turned their anger on civilians, including children and women.
We
ran with nothing. Once the armed men get you, whether you're a child, a woman, or elderly, you will be killed. We don't know how many people had been killed at the moment.
Lobari says the fighting has spread to Logo and Pisak villages. Yei River County Commissioner Justin Lokonga confirmed the fighting is ongoing in the area, but says he does not know why the two sides are fighting each other.
There was clashes in the area of Minyori Payam, a group of Glenn Thomas, and then versus IO headed by Gadi. They clash among themselves and they displace very many people, wounding about four people wounded too seriously. They are in the hospital now. A number of deaths, which I cannot account because we are not there as a government. Very many people are displaced, children, elderly, women. We as a government, we are for peace and then we have started implementing the peace.
Lokonga condemns the fighting and is urging the rebel groups to respect the peace deal. SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Lam Paul Gabriel also confirmed fighting continues, but accused National Salvation Front forces, led by General Thomas Cirillo, of attacking SPLA-IO positions.
We have been attacked. Our forces moved away from Nyori. That's when they arrived in our territory, they found there were no soldiers, so they decided to go and harass the community and the civilians, and killing around five civilians so far. We know that Nas Thomas Cirillo does not want the peace and he has not signed the peace. So it's a clear sign that Thomas Cirillo means his business and that's why he's fighting us. This morning they continued with their aggression. That's why civilians are have moved out of their territory into Yen.
South Sudan in Focus could not reach National Salvation Front spokesman Yen Metio for comments as his phone numbers were unreachable. Mohamed Sion, the head of UN OCHA in Yei, says aid agencies are helping affected civilians as best they can.
Well, we are doing rapid assessment. We have deployed a team to look at the situation of the RDPs. Some of our partners here, you know, providing life-saving assistance. So the shelter is a huge gap. We're trying to see if we can address that. Food also seems to be a big problem because we don't have anyone to provide, you know, some food assistance on a sustainable basis.
Chapter 2 of the Sand Security Deal prohibits all parties to the agreement against from participating in hostile actions or displacing civilians. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday-Martin, reporting from Yei Town.
South Africa's deputy president has told South Sudan's leaders to implement the revitalized peace deal so that peace can be restored across the country. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
David Mabuza, who is also South Africa's special envoy to South Sudan, arrived in Juba yesterday and held talks with President Salva Kiir, other officials, and former detainees on implementing the agreement. Speaking to reporters today, Mabuza described the mood he found in Juba as grateful that all parties signed the revitalized deal last month and expressed their willingness to fully implement it.
Our main objective of being here is to support all the initiatives that are here that are aimed at finding long-lasting solutions and peace for the people of South Sudan.
Mabuza did not disclose the specific support his country will provide to South Sudan's parties, and journalists were not allowed to ask him questions, including his reaction to the latest outbreak of deadly fighting in Yei River State. Mabuza says after meeting with several stakeholders to the agreement, he found that most South Sudanese are positive about the deal's implementation.
I'm grateful that all the participants, including government, they are all optimistic that this kind of an agreement that is before us now must be implemented, and they request all our support in the region, all the governments that are involved must support and make this agreement a reality.
After speaking to reporters in Juba today, Mabuza departed the South Sudanese capital for stops in Sudan, Kenya, and Uganda to rally support for the implementation of the peace deal. Mayik Ayideng, a minister in the office of the president, says President Kiir is committed to implementing the peace deal, but told Mabuza that Juba needs financial support in order to implement the agreement.
Because, as you know, since the war erupted, our main source of income was oil, and the oil production went down, and we are facing a lot of financial challenges. But yet, President believes that these problems, we can overcome them, and we will implement the peace agreement.
This is the first time a high-ranking South African official has visited South Sudan following the signing of the peace agreement. After the conflict erupted in late 2013, South Africa participated in efforts to try to reunify factions of the ruling SPLM party. Up until recently, the SPLM-IO had accused South Africa of meddling in the affairs of South Sudan after the South African government placed Riek Machar under house arrest. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The fourth annual CAS conference in Minnesota brought together dozens of South Sudanese from around the country and Canada during what they describe as a pivotal time in their country. The head of the Coalition of Advocates for South Sudan, Ruben Gareng, says participants were focused on making sure the U.S. remains committed to South Sudan by pressuring lawmakers and leaders in the country to respect the new peace agreement.
This is something that civilians and people of concern were waiting for. Everybody wanted to see peace come to South Sudan. And so having the CAS Fourth Annual Conference is important in a sense that, the peace agreement that has been signed is on the papers. you know, and for it to be translated into life of people, to be a meaningful peace, it, you know, people need to be involved, people need to be engaged, people need to be told to reassure their trust in the system and also to rebuild relationship that has been destroyed during the wars.
You were around a number of South Sudanese this past weekend, and I'm wondering, what was the sense that you got from them about their hopes and their expectations for their country?
Personally, I have a mixed feeling from, you know, hearing people, observing them. I think there are people that think that, you know, the solution will come when the communities are informed, engaged, and know what is happening, which is not the case now. And also people seem to be not really sure about, you know, what are some of the mechanisms to actually reach out to people that are affected, especially people in the displaced camp, people that are isolated in their villages in different parts of the country. You know, how do we reach out to these people to assure to them that, you know, they need to be part of the solution? And one of the ways is that peace between communities, peace between villages, peace between clans that are divided because of the war, peace between ethnic groups, you know, for it to really be a meaningful peace.
Was there anything that stood out to you or anything that surprised you from this weekend?
The participation of women was something that really, that I've seen, was very important and something that I think inspired all of us that came, you know, with very informed young women that are determined that, you know.
Why did that surprise you this year? Were there more women this year?
There was more women this year. There was more women than a man, I would say. And then also there was a panel of women to discuss the issue. Before we usually had, you know, in our previous conferences, we focus a lot on politicians and also community leaders. And we know that our communities are structured in a way that men dominate. But this year, we do it differently. So women came out. And also, it's not just only their attendance, but their input that was huge and important.
You mentioned before that this is a pivotal time for South Sudan. Was that idea, was that sentiment shared among participants?
Yes, yes, I think people do. As I mentioned earlier, people wanted to see peace come. And also people think that, you know, the peace that has been signed is very much addressing the political needs of the warring parties. But there's no structure in terms of reaching out to communities.
That's Ruben Gareng, head of the Coalition of Advocates for South Sudan, speaking to me earlier today from Winnipeg, Manitoba, in Canada. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A South Sudanese woman's activist uses arts and crafts to empower women. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you think is the most important human right?
To me, the most important human right is for everyone to be given a fair trial, that is, those that are in court, so that they don't get punished for something that they did not commit.
The most important human right is the right to live, because God is the maker of human beings. So he has given you that opportunity. So you should have the freedom to move anywhere you want to. There's no restriction.
The freedom of speech that I think is, when I have something which is burning within me, I have the right to tell you, do you think you are doing is wrong? When it's right, I will tell you the thing is right. And when you stop me from saying that, everything will get worse because you have neglected my right.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. 800 commercial sex workers in Juba are being detained after being arrested over the weekend. The deputy mayor of the Juba City Council says commercial sex is illegal in South Sudan, and the practice is increasing chances of spreading the HIV virus to people living in the city. The head of the Ugandan community in Juba accuses police of harassing sex workers and stealing money from them during the crackdown. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
Juba police and city council officials raided scores of hotels and lodges in the city over the weekend, arresting commercial sex workers and owners of establishments where sex workers were operating. Nial Majag Nial, the deputy mayor of Juba City Council, says prostitution is illegal in Juba.
Juba City Council, as a local authority in the ground in Juba, is implementing the national laws, and we have seen commercial sex is flourishing in Juba. So this is actually an illegal business that is killing the people.
Nial says 200 people were arrested on Friday and hundreds more were arrested on Saturday and Sunday. Jackie Apio, the acting chairperson of the Ugandan community in Juba, says more than 1,800 commercial sex workers and owners of the lodges from different countries were arrested during the crackdown. She says some of the women were released on bail or after paying a fine, but some 800 others are still in police custody in different cells across Juba. But Apio says some corrupt police officers robbed and harassed the sex workers during the raids.
When they break a lady's house, you find they have taken money, clothes were taken, a lot of things, funny things were done to these girls, which is really not fair. They are making them carry their condoms in their hands, yet condoms are part of life.
Apio was in court today defending some of the Ugandan women charged with engaging in prostitution. She says judicial officers told the prostitutes who appeared in court today to pay a fine of 20,000 South Sudanese pounds, which is equivalent to $100 each, before they are released. Juba City Council officers took some of the arrested women to be tested for HIV virus.
We just took a random sample of 48 of them. 20% of them were HIV positive. Those who are found to be coming from across the borders, the embassies will be contacted today. And this part of the issue becomes a national issue. These people are supposed to be deported.
There is no exact amount as a fine for prostitution. It depends on what a particular judge decides. In today's case, five women paid 20,000 South Sudanese pounds as a fine for practicing prostitution, and they were released. The Penal Code of South Sudan 2008, Article 253, says living off or facilitating prostitution is a crime. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
A South Sudanese human rights activist says she is empowering women through arts and craft to discover their potential. Anyeth Dewol is the founder of the Roots Project, an initiative bringing women from different backgrounds together. She says the project has benefited many women who are now self-reliant.
The Roots Project is a women's organization. We're bringing women together around traditional craft, mainly beadwork. And they are sitting together from different communities and empowering themselves economically, sitting together and, you know, building social structures and preserving culture, our cultures.
And how many women are you working with in South Sudan? Give me a rough estimate.
We work with 67 women at the center, which is in Nimratalata and Hainim, and Women's Union in Hainim. And we also work with women in POC. So there are 30 women in POC and 15 women from Gorom camp.
This word empowerment is an NGO jargon. I don't understand what it means to empower somebody. Can you tell us from your experience working with these women, what is this empowerment?
Well, for us, empowerment is creating the conditions so that the woman can do whatever she needs to do. So we provide beads and a material and a space for them to be able to work. So then they earn as much as they work. They also have the other women to kind of learn from learn other skills, learn how to cope with certain situations, social situations, cultural situations. We have women of different ages, different backgrounds, so there's a lot of opportunity for the women to sort of develop their own lives. So that's what we mean by empowerment. Empowerment is giving the woman the power and removing the conditions that make things pretty impossible.
Are there any positive stories from these women that you work with? I'm talking about testimonies, because I hear a lot of NGOs are out there doing a lot of good work, but we rarely get to hear testimonies from beneficiaries of these projects. Are there any testimonies you would like to share with our audience from members of the Roots Project?
We've been in operation since 2009, so almost 10 years now. Most of the women have put a lot of their kids through school. They are the sole breadwinners at the moment with the economic depression. It's the only source of income for these women. And we have women who are also starting their own little businesses. Some of them have bought generators. Some of them are charging phones. Some of them are selling food items in the local communities. So they're able to become also entrepreneurs just by also the trainings that we provide at the center. Another testimony of even just like peace building. When we went to the POC, it was a very hard situation. The women in there were feeling very isolated and didn't actually trust people outside. So we persisted. We continued to go into the camps to make sure that we can also bring the beads to the women in there so that they can also earn, so that also their culture is part of the Roots Project. And within a month of the women going and giving them beads, and they also made their own community, so they sit together and they make beads, and we always ensure that they have a meal to share. The women said that they were grateful. They were grateful and that they had hope. And for them, they look at other people and other women particularly just as victims of war, just as they are. So this was a link and a bridge that was very important for us to make, because, the isolation of people, this is something that we really are discouraging, you know, like that's why we work with women from different communities. We have women from 21 different tribes. So we want to keep the Roots Project like a national project where we are proud of who we are and everything that we are.
Annette Duol is the founder of the Roots Project, an initiative of women working to bring women together. She was speaking with my colleague John Tanza in Baltimore, Maryland yesterday. In part two of this interview, Duol speaks about life for women in Juba Town. Kenya's former sports minister Hassan Wario and Olympic track star Kip Keino face charges of misappropriating more than $500,000. They are among seven people accused of misusing money intended for Kenya's 2016 Rio Olympics team. Keino was the head of the Kenyan Olympic Committee at the time. They are accused of purchasing unauthorized plane tickets, spending funds on unapproved persons, and overpaying allowances. The 78-year-old Keino is considered a pioneer in sports for Kenya, who led the way for generations of distance runners and other athletes into world competition. A French prosecutor has recommended dropping the investigation against eight Rwandan officials, including the defense minister, General James Kabarebe, over the plane crash that killed President Juvenal Habarimana in 1994 and set off the country's genocide. In Kigali, the National Commission for the Fight Against Genocide welcomed the recommendation. Political analysts say the recommendation, plus France's support for Rwanda's foreign minister to take the presidency of the Organization of La Francophone, show that France intends to improve relations with Kigali. Eugene Iwimana has details from Kigali.
The French investigation into the downing of Rwandan President Habyarimana Juvenal's plane in 1994 worsened relations. Rwanda's government in turn accused France of supporting the Habyarimana government, which it said prepared and committed genocide against the Tutsi community in 1994. Havugimana Emmanuel is the chairman of the board of Rwanda's Commission for the Fight Against Genocide. He says we greatly salute that decision. Now the relations of Rwanda and France are improving because of new leaders. He says he thanks French President Emmanuel Macron, who is showing the new image of France. Jean Bosco Mutangana, the Rwandan General Prosecutor, says so far he has not yet been officially notified about the decision.
There is no notification. I mean, any notification has to come from the French government, the Rwandan government, through diplomatic channels, and I don't have that. Of course, I've read it in the media, but we would love to have an official communication coming to us through diplomatic channels, and I think that is the best way.
It is not the first time that this case is closed and reopened since 1998. Christopher Kayumba, a lecturer at the University of Rwanda and a political analyst, says if this case is finally at its end, it will open wider relations between France and Rwanda.
It is an issue that has not been taken to court, but an issue that is litigated for many years. So I think if it is closed, it would mean that at least one of the issues the two governments have been disagreeing on for 20 years has ended, and then maybe they can talk about other issues that have been dodging the relationship between the two countries for 24 years.
The French prosecutors said that despite years of work, the investigation has not yielded sufficient evidence, so it should end. Now investigative magistrates must decide whether to accept that recommendation or take the case on to a tribunal. Judges do not necessarily follow prosecutors' recommendations. The probe opened in France in 1998 in response to requests by relatives of the French crew who died when Habyarimana's plane was shot down. The investigations on Rwanda's ruling party, RPF, officials have led to major tensions between France and Rwanda over the past two decades. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Donny Donny by Usmenes. Ake Donny Donny, ni make Donny Donny, Ake Donny Donny, no tere ni misa.
Je me demande comment tu fais pour toi là-haut. Comment tu fais pour toi là-haut. Oh. Je me demande comment tu fais pour toi là-haut. Comment tu fais pour toi là-haut. Oh. Il est maillé. Sunguru ya télé de Dunyaba. Il est maillé. Sunguru ya fana de Dunyaba. Il est maillé. Kamele ya télé de Dunyaba. Il est maillé.
La réussite a un nom. Diwai, le docteur du sous-sol, qui transforme le chigome en médicament.
Je me demande comment tu fais pour toi là-haut.
Comment
tu fais pour toi là-haut.
Tu as parlé.
Oh. Je me demande comment tu fais pour toi là-haut. Comment tu fais pour toi là-haut.
Vrai, vrai.
We've been listening to Usmenes with the song Donny Donny. I'm Ayan Dengbior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I